Hi guys, it's Kara, host of Everyone's Business But Mine. And let's be real, one thing that makes the show possible is by selling sponsorships to advertisers. One way you can support us in getting more sponsors is by telling us a little bit more about yourself. You can do that by filling out a quick survey at the link in the show description. Plus, your answers are anonymous. They'll help us learn what you love most about the show and how to make it even better. The questions will ask you about the things that help advertisers understand the audience. It'll only take a few minutes, and it's an easy way to help the show. So you can find the link in the show description. Thank you so much, and stay tuned for the rest of the show.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I want to apologize to you for the way I acted last year during your divorce. I know that you were going through a lot and probably didn't need any of that extra shit.
But you're apologizing, that's great. But for me, like, apologies are just, like, words. At the end of the day, Tom, like, you f***ed up big time.
Oh, yeah.
It's fathomless, really, to carry on in an affair like that.
Fathomless?
Yeah.
Like, wow, like, you can't even fathom that happening?
No, because you know what I did? I walked away from a 12-year marriage when I still had my life.
Welcome back to another episode of Everyone's Business But Mine with me, Kara Berry. Today, we're talking Vanderpump Rules and the Valley. I'm not happy about it, but unfortunately, I fear the premiere was not horrible, and I also suspect that it might be the same for the rest of the season. We're going to get to that at the end because I am in, not celebration of, but in light of recent events, the recent events being that I watch The Valley, I've come up with a new segment, but we'll get into that at the end. With that, let's talk about Vanderpump Rules. I'm coming on here annoyed because, you know, we've all seen the many now headlines at this point. It was once a blind item, but now Lala's talked about it so many times that, you know, I guess it's true that they filmed the reunion for this season of Vanderpump Rules over the past weekend, and that Ariana, like, dug into Lala's ass. We don't know the specifics, but it sounds like a friendship-ending situation. Lala's been doing hella promo. She's got a whole press tour. I'm not really sure what for, but what she has been talking about this whole week has been this situation. Like, as much as she can, talking around it, but saying that, yes, this very much did happen, but she feels at peace with what went down, and she wouldn't take back a thing. Yes, it was a friendship ending situation, but, like, she's good. So I'm just, like, finding this whole season a little bit frustrating just because maybe I should just, like, not be on the internet. Is it possible to have a podcast and not be on the internet? I don't know, but I just am finding myself, like, annoyed, but I feel like maybe people are coming over to the right side of history and are seeing time and time again Ariana is having to be gracious in the face of people playing in her face, and she's really not being this like hard scrabbled witch bitch that y'all all were expecting and wanting her to be. And now we're seeing Sheena fucking spiraling, doing a fucking pot de bourrée over this Dancing with the Stars season that she is acting like was just ripped out of her coffin nails. And, you know, which is all very frustrating to me, you know, because I was like, Sheena Shay now, and she is our strongest soldier. I was like, give her the fucking Emmy last season. And now I knew in the back of my mind that like she would play me this season, but I just wasn't expecting to this degree, and I'm getting frustrated, girl. And I don't love it. I don't love it. So let's talk about this episode and really get into it, right? So we begin back at Casa de Arianaval. I don't know. It's hell in there. I'm not going to lie. It's hell in here. Anne, poor sweet Anne, and Jessica, a woman who we've never seen before, says that it's Tom Sandoval's friend, but I'm sure she's also on the payroll. They're helping him set up for a pool party that he's having. The saddest pool party of all. This is a dark comparison, but when I was watching the Wendy Williams documentary and just seeing most of it was filmed in her apartment, and I was saying that it was just very palpable, the sadness that was happening in that apartment. Like, you could feel it. And I feel the same way. And everybody keeps confirming that. Like, every time Sandoval is in this house, there's a coldness here. It just feels weird. The energy is off. And it's showing. It's palpable to me. Like, every time we're just seeing people I've never seen before, Tom really going the extra mile to, like, be Tom Sandoval, nice boy. And it just doesn't really fit. Like, everybody is wearing clothes that just don't quite fit them, you know? We keep pulling our pants up. The sweater is not really hitting on the shoulders right. It's, like, itchy, you know, the material. Like, it just doesn't feel good. It just feels weird. Anyway, he's, like, getting ready. Meanwhile, Ariana's upstairs. She's getting ready to get the fuck out, right? She's FaceTiming Katie. Katie's getting ready to go to dinner with Lala to hash things out because, you know, Lala told her disengage at Allie's astrology party last night, right? So Katie meets up with Lala at the Henry. Lala starts off this conversation by saying that this is the third time now that Katie has looked at her as though she's her enemy. And when they play flashbacks of said enemy ship, it's simply Katie trying to guide Lala in the direction of, like, not making everybody else's issues about her and Booger. And it's weird to me. Like, I'm rocking with you, Katie, in ways that I haven't before. So Lala asks Katie, don't you feel like you hit below the belt with me? And Katie's like, I know I have. And she's like, okay, well, I know that I retaliated last night. I'm not proud of it. So then in a confessional, Lala says that she and Katie used to be like ride or dies for each other, super in sync. But now she's trying to get soft and heal because she doesn't want to end up like a miserable bitch. But Katie doesn't want to, like, get off the warpath. Is this your friend? Is this how friends speak to each other and about each other? I don't want to be a miserable bitch, but Katie's still on her warpath. Okay. And again, like, you're making it about you. You're making it about you. And if you want to be soft so bad, then fucking do it. Stop talking about it. Like, I keep hearing her saying this, like, I want to be better. But then you're popping off and being like, oh, look at my birth chart. Oh, look, I'm going through a hell of a lot. Katie, don't you know how much I've gone through in the past year and a half? Don't you see? I've been working so hard to drop it. I've been altering my life. Have you? I have not seen her behave any differently. She's not yelled any less. She's not screamed any less at people. She's not had to apologize any less than she has any other season. Like, I don't know. Like, softer? Are we just, like, walking around in, like organic cotton. Like, I don't, I'm just not really seeing the difference. Anyway, so basically they make up with each other, and Katie's like, I get it. Like, she basically backs off and is like, I don't want to be, you know, contributing to the hardships. Basically the same thing that Lala does, same song, different verse, you know, just, why are you coming for me? Why are you holding me accountable? Don't you know what I'm going through? Can't you be easier on me? Sure, Lala. Sure. Is there any version of you that could be a little bit softer with me? Because I'm working on it. Like, you've been working on it since 1993. Back to this weird fucking pool party Tom's having. Schwartz is there, briefly. One thing about Schwartz is, like, he does not want to be at any of these parties. He's ready to get the fuck ASAP. I don't want to be here. I'm taking my flip-flops and going. But before I go, man, quick question, quick little conversation. Maybe could you possibly consider the optics of bringing random chicks back to your house? You know, especially if I'm here, because I don't want to be implicated as some sort of wingman. Okay, you should have thought about that 9 months ago, sir. You should have thought about that back then. So then Schwartz says in a confessional, I'm all for him putting himself out there. Like, he was encouraging him to do it at that weird guys' night that they had. But maybe you don't do it under the same roof of the girl that you cheated on. Like, oh, okay. First of all, would you like him to do it at your apartment again? Do you want him to use your house as a love nest? Little love shack? How about we skip on over to your apartment again? Can Joe clear out that apartment that room she doesn't live in? To make room for Sandoval getting his mojo back? How about we do that? Let's not do it on camera. Do it under the cloak of darkness of your weird fucking apartment. How about that? With the mice. Hey, ladies, you want to see some mice on the floor? Does that make you horny? And also, I thought Ariana was a patron saint of scored women like 2 minutes ago. And now all of a sudden we're worrying about the optics. Okay. It's because you're here. That's all. Like, you don't want to be down with the ship because you know how this looks. It's weird and desperate. But honestly, you should be comforted by the fact that this is more weird and desperate, and that Sandoval is not going to get anywhere with nan one of these women. Except for maybe Billy Lee, like, is probably just going to, like, you know, be slowly putting trash into a can and hoping that maybe he's not too high off Molly, allegedly, to, throw a little kiss her way at the end of the night. Anyway, speaking of Billy Lee, she's there with her little toes in the pool, like, hey, did you meet my friend T? This is, like, very classic. Like, I'm trying to set you up with my friend, you know? And Sandoval's like, yeah, I saw her. And? She's cool. So then Billy Lee is like, is anybody else coming over tonight? Like an after-hours situation? Like, who asks that? Why do you care? So then Tom's like, I don't want to cause any friction with my roommate. And then Billy looks at Tom, like, rolling her eyes. Like, she's trying to keep herself from saying something, like a true cat that ate the canary. Like, what leg do you have to stand on, Billy? Oh, let me not be shady on camera. Like you guys are, like, legitimately giggling over Ariana. Like, please, get real. So then some girls that I guess he met at See You Next Tuesday came over. They texted him, we're outside. Were they related? Were they twins? I honestly don't know. They get in the pool, and Tom, they're like the twins in the elevator from The Shining, just standing there, staring. Tom's flatlining. Like, it is horrible. He starts off with a cheers. Let's cheers to being positive and testing negative. And they're like, cool. Tom's friend Israel's, like, showing up and showing out. Like, hey, do you guys have husbands? Y'all have boyfriends? And they're like, no. And so Tom's like, well, I'll probably get married next year. Just kidding. Have you guys been to Burning Man? This would have been a really great year for me to go. Like, I'm single. Like, and I do have a roommate, though. Like, have I told you guys about my roommate? It's just my ex-girlfriend. Like, and both of them are like, oh. Well, it's nothing serious. It's like a 10-year relationship. Like, he's trying to be sarcastic, you know. And I keep her locked in the room, and, like, I like, crush up little potato chips under the door for her. Like, I'm just kidding. Cheers. And they're like, okay. Horrible. Horrible. After the party, Ariana comes down. Like, this is the next day. Poor sweet Anne. And I tweeted this, and I really wish this happened. I know Anne, you know, she's got an NDA or something. She can't release this information. But I really hope that at the end, that they had Anne come at the end of the reunion and just do a rousing rendition of Billie Eilish's What Was I Made For from the Barbie movie. Because she deserves that. I honestly think that would tie this whole thing together in a way that would be truly emotional, heartwarming, and compelling. Another and possibly another Emmy nomination right there, okay? So anyway, after the party, Ariana comes down. It's a disaster. It is a disaster. There are beach towels in the kitchen sink, just like chips, chunks of hair on the floor. And she's like, Ariana's like, what is this girl doing? What is her job? What is her actual job? So then Anne has to shovel upstairs to go to the gym, like huffing and puffing, to tell Tom that, you know, Ariana and Gina are going to be hanging out downstairs. And he's like, well, how's downstairs looking? So in a confessional, he says that part of Anne's job is light housekeeping. And basically, like, I know whatever I can't get into, like, Anne will clean up, you know, cut to the dozens of bottles of water, the jugs of dozens of bottles of alcohol, jugs of water, those, like, 10-gallon jugs. Like, the towels in the kitchen sink really sent me over the edge. And he goes, you know, I'm not leaving a mess ever. Yeah, well, I can see why you feel like, if you don't feel like your current life is a mess, yeah, you've never left one in your life. I see that. So Sheena comes over, and it was so hard to even pay attention, even though this was an important scene, because Sheena's doing side work with Maya the dog. They're having such an emotional hand-holding situation, and they're really, like, attuned with each other on that couch. And just in a way that was just very sweet. Very sweet and natural. A more natural relationship that she has with her husband. Anyway, so Ariana comes over. Sheena comes over, and Ariana tells her, like, oh, I'm going to plan a game night the next night, right? But then she's like, how are you? Because I keep hearing from other people that you're mad at me. So there are flashbacks to, you know, Lala telling her outside of that juice place that she needs to tell her Ariana stands to stand down because they came for her after that picture on page 6. Lisa telling her, you know, Sheena was the one to find out last minute about Dancing with the Stars, to which Ariana says, did she want me to breach my NDA with the show to tell her? You see how when everybody's like, oh, I have an issue with Ariana, every time she's very calmly responding to them with very reasonable responses? Interesting. So then Sheena's like, oh, beep, beep, beep. Back it up. Back it up, Shishu. Oh, I don't like anybody telling me how I feel and putting words in my mouth, especially Lisa. Look, okay, well, that's interesting because basically verbatim what Lisa told Ariana. Now, Lisa can be a messy little Vanderpump. That's for sure. But what she said to Ariana is basically what you've been saying even up until this week in, like, interviews and podcasts and stuff, that you were very hurt by this and you did not appreciate being the last one to know. So, I mean, she didn't put words, she took them out of your mouth, put them into hers, and then showed them to Ariana. That's what happened. Anyway, so Sheena goes on to be like, obviously, you know that I wanted Dancing with the Stars forever. I started to take dance classes and, you know, I thought I would be in consideration for the season, but, you know, you never told me that you got it. And I thought, like, oh my gosh, like, damn, I wish I had heard from you. Was it a punch to the gut? Was I disappointed? Did I have a good cry? Of course I did. But, you know, I'm happy for you. So pause to current time, right? Sheena explains, I think in an after show or Shenanigans or Lala's podcast, again, I'm not sure. There's a lot of things that happened, that she had gone to the season before finale. She's friends, close friends with the D'Amelio family. Okay. Very close friends. And so she had gone to the finale. One of those girls, Charlie or Aurora or whatever, won that season. And so she was at the finale. The D'Amelio family that she's very close friends with were like, oh my gosh, how have you not been on the show? They like got her to shake hands with casting other people from the show. And they were like, oh my gosh, you should be in the running. So at that point, Sheena starts taking dance classes because she thinks, oh, this is in the bag for me. She says after that party, they like sort of kept in touch with these people from dancing that it sounds like it was like on a schmooze level, like maybe an Instagram, maybe a DM, maybe text here and there, but like nothing deep. She's not like in the boardroom. Okay. And so she got her hopes up, started getting a little presumptuous, thinking that this was a done deal. It wasn't. She feels some type of way about that. I get it. It's an ego thing. Especially if it's your friend. Like, she'd certainly be feeling some type of way if nobody from Vanderpump got it. Double toil and trouble that it was, like, Ariana. Right? I get that. However, not a drop of this is Ariana's fault. And, okay, you don't like that you didn't hear it straight from the source. I can also get that. That I think is like the most reasonable thing that she's saying out of this whole thing. Like, she knew that she wanted it. The very least she could be like, hey girl, I got it. Good luck next time. You know, I could understand that. But the fact that she's still carrying this on now, and Sandoval also mentioned it in the after show that he also did the same thing, started taking dance classes, really wanted to be on the show at some point in time. Like, okay, like, what would be the point of him taking dance classes? Because we know all he would do is just the default to the NSYNC body wave that he always does. Trying to tell Julianne Hough how to pot a bourrée. Okay, get real. Like, y'all see it. Y'all see that train wreck happening before it even, we can predict it. Where am I? So the point of this is, like, okay, you didn't get a heads up, fine. But I also feel like the fact that you keep jabbering about this, Sheena, is probably not a great look. If I were in casting, and I'm not, nor do I know what the motivations of people in casting would be for the most part. I mean, I can understand that maybe they would take the person who is most bankable from your show, and then maybe you would have an opportunity down the road because of how well she did. But now that you keep talking about it and how butthurt you were, and I hate that term, personally, I would be like, I don't know if I really want her on the show. She sounds like a fucking nightmare. So maybe, shh, girl, I don't know if this is going to be helping you in the future. So Ariana very diplomatically tells Sheena, I get what you're saying. I'm just concerned because I'm hearing how you're feeling through all these other people and not from you yourself in the moment. And it scares me that maybe we're in a place where you feel more comfortable talking to other people than to me directly. And Sheena's excuses like, well, with Lala, I just think like, you know, we're just around each other a little bit more often. And like, maybe just, you know, these sorts of things come up, right? But then she says in a confessional, I feel like Ariana used to be my person and I would talk to her about everything. But lately, talking to her has been difficult. And I feel like she's not been super receptive with my feelings. And so this kind of makes me pause again, because I'm thinking outside of the reunion and like her saying, hey, guys, I don't really want to keep people in my very close circle if they're going to be friends with that dude down the hall. We haven't really seen her be like, this is where I'm feeling. This is where I'm at emotionally with regard to my breakup that happened to me. all we've heard her do is experience how people are like, why aren't you listening to my feelings? I have not heard her say anything about really her feelings other than like maybe a little snarky thing here or there, but I haven't seen her being like wallowing or frankly, I feel like she's handling this breakup pretty well 3 months after the fact. Like, I would have been like, just finding excuses to talk shit about that dude, you know, like they would have been like, in Tahoe, we don't do the meditation. Why don't we get back to back? Like he stabbed me in like the back that he stabbed me in. Like I'd be just throwing darts like that left and right. Anytime I could get a little lick in. And yet here she is. I'm just not getting it. It just feels like it's such a divide between the people who just like have decided that they hate Ariana. And they hear these rumors and they're like, oh, that feels like true. That feels true. I believe that because she's a bitch to me. Because I don't like her. I've seen people being like, I'm actively choosing to believe this thing that somebody is saying, I don't even know if this is true. And they're like, oh, that sounds right. And y'all are just truly going on vibes based on the fact that y'all just don't like her because she has too much. And that's all it is. And that's so crazy to me. That's all it is. It's like, she has too much in my eyes. Like, she has received too much and people like her too much. And therefore, I'm not going to be part of it. And that's so wild to me. It's so weird. Like, I'm combing for answers from people who dislike her in this moment as to why. And it always just comes back to, it's too much. But, like, I'm going to move on. Because at this point, like, we're not on the same side of the aisle. I don't think we're going to be. So, like, why bother? You know? Why bother? Okay, just let time. You know what? The great philosopher Justin Bobby said it so clearly. Truth and time tells all. And so we're just going to let that happen. Okay? So after that, Sheena says, I don't feel like she's been super receptive with my feelings. So then she tells her, you know, Ariana, when it comes to me, I feel like more than anybody in the group, you should know who Sandoval was to me up until March 1st. I missed that friend of 14 years. And Ariana says, it's hard because, like, sure, maybe I miss the person who used to exist, but then all of these things come to my mind that are just so insidious. And it's hard for me to hear my best friend be like, oh, I miss that person. So then Sheena just does not absorb that at all. Not the fact that her friend is like taking herself and her relationship that ended out of the situation to be like a friend to her and say, Sheena, I hear what you're saying and I can understand that feeling, but also I'm trying to explain to you that the person that you think existed is a fucking liar, Camille. And I don't think that's real. And so, as your friend, and not even as the woman who dealt with the heartbreak of this dude, I'm concerned for you to put yourself and your heart out there with somebody who I'm telling you doesn't give a fuck. Does not. So then, Sheena just like, we just leap over that. Well, what about this? What if, like, years from now, I was to come to you and say, you know what? I've seen Sandoval do all this work. He's a completely different person. I'm going to see about kind of being his friend again. How would you feel? And so Ariana says in a confessional, I think she's bringing this up because she 100% has plans to be friends with Tom Sandoval. And I think she's trying to soften the blow for when this becomes a reality. So Ariana tells her, you know, I would side-eye the situation, not in a judging way, but more in the sense of, like, you in danger, girl. You. I'm going to take myself out of this. And as your friend tell you, I still don't think this is a great idea. Genuinely. And this is going to go back to Ariana. She's not listening to me. No, she's not telling you what you want to hear. That's the problem. let's calm down and take a little boat ride, a little duck ride with Joe and Shorts. These are the noises that they just make at each other. What's going on? Also, did you guys see that Instagram story that Joe did after the reunion? It was so pick me, choose me, love me that, like, I'm almost uncomfortable talking about it. But then basically what she does is she first thanks all of you who have supported her, and loved her and her journey with Schwartz. And then, honestly, like, I can't remember what she said, but it was just, like, was going on and on and on and on about Schwartz and, you know, like, their friendship and whatever. I don't know. At this point, I just feel bad for her. Like, yeah, she's annoying, but, like, whatever. You know, so am I, okay? But the thing is, like, she just clearly is deeply in love with this dude who's keeping her, like, I don't even think on the back burner. And that's sad. Because she really seems to love this dude. And I, you know, reasons unknown, but I don't need to know them. But she's down bad. And that's sad. It's sad. Anyway, they're going on a little duck paddle thing in Echo Park. Y'all remember when I was talking to Chai last week and I said that Joe had the hair of a girl who had a real, real good time at the beach. And then today, here was she wearing a little hat and saying, oh, she just came from surfing. How do I get this shit? I know. So a producer says to Shorts, kind of sounds like despite all the talk of you guys not dating, it does look a little bit like you guys are on a date. So Shorts says, you know, I could probably marry her and be very happy, but I don't want to do that right now. Like, I do, but I don't. Getting out of a 13-year relationship and hopping right into another one just feels haphazard, you know? And if this were my friend, I would tell him maybe date some other people and explore. So then Joe tells Shorts, I got a turtle story. Okay? Because of course she does. Of course you do, bitch. So she tells him that when she was 6, she had a turtle that she would walk on a leash named Charlie. And it's like, I mean, if you were to tell me to write a paragraph about Joe and what her origin story was, bar for bar, I would have said that. She walked a fucking turtle around. I know this girl, not a horse girl. She's a turtle girl, a turtle girl. So the turtle's named Charlie. One day they're walking past a sewer and he fell in. She couldn't find him. And, you know, bada bing, bada boom, Charlie becomes a Ninja Turtle. So then she tells Schwartz that she's going to be meeting up with Allie to do an astrology reading for her. And she tells us she was intimidated by Allie because Allie's so beautiful. But then she got a really good vibe from her. Like, Allie was shading you that whole time. Like, real low-key. But she was shading you. And then Joe says in a confessional that the other girls did not give her a fair chance. Specifically Katie. Because Katie was just being a jealous ex. But then she thinks, honestly, I think anybody that Tom Shorts will ever be with is going to get a lot of hate from her. And it's like, girl, this ain't that kind of party. I really don't think it is. She's got beef with you because you were a sometimey ass bitch telling her that Bieber and you love her and then moving in with her ex-husband like 2 months later and fucking him all summer. You think that might be why she feels some type of way about you? Girl, come on. After that, there's a big get-together at the Belmont. Is the Belmont a real place? Like, I know it's, I see it, but it just feels like not an actual bar. But, like, you know those commercials where they set up a fake bar and they're, or, like, a fake scenario? And they're like, hey, come to this bar and, you know, we'll give you really bad service and then they give you, like, I don't know, like, Amstel Light. And they're like, oh, my God, this is the best beer. I did not know it was Amstel Light. Those fake bars that are, like, brightly lit. And they bring in just real people off the street to try a beer, right? That's what it looks like. I don't feel like the people go to the Belmont to, like, actually kick it. But maybe I'm wrong. So anyway, I'm never going. So this is neither here nor there. Sandoval says that he's using this get together, his little kickback, as a way to move forward and connect with his friends. So it's like a bunch of random people. It's Vanderpump people and like seemingly actual friends in the Vanderpump universe, not these randos we see with Billy Lee at these parties, if you can even call them that, that Sandoval has. So anyway, it's like a bunch of people. Sandoval and Schwartz are talking and he's at the bar and he's like, oh, you know, this like feels really great. But then they play this music, like this vampy bad girl music, while Katie and Ariana walk in. They weren't supposed to be there. Turns out Katie talked Ariana into coming. So everybody's like, oh my God, y'all showed up. I can't even put into words how big of a deal it is that Ariana's here breathing the same air as Tom Sandoval. And so then Lala says, you know, I feel like she's here to like reclaim her throne from Tom. And I'm here for it because I'd much rather look at Ariana than Sandoval. She's much prettier to look at. Like, you still feel that way, girl? I don't know if that's true anymore. So Ariana says in a confessional, I can't let my ex prevent me from hanging out with my friends for the rest of my life. Like, I'm not looking around because I don't want to catch any straight eye contact, but let me tell you, I can feel those eyes buried into me. And he actually is staring right at her and he looks over at Schwartz and goes, I gotta take a shit. And so Schwartz goes, this is the best poop bathroom in all of LA. And Schwartz, Sandoval says, you know, I know, but I think I'm gonna have to use one in the front. Ew. So the girls go outside to talk. Allie tells them how Joe had texted her the other day to read her chart and they're going to meet up together. And Allie goes, you know, she's quirky. And Katie says, that's a generous statement. Quirky? Katie says in a confessional, I mean, where do I start? Kristen Doty was her best friend. A statement that speaks for itself. But then this girl just really infiltrated the rest of my life. The day I announced my divorce, she sends me a text message and they only pan up to what Joe said, but you know, I hit pause to get the whole thing. And so Joe says, Bieber loves you / I love you. And I'm so supporting of your inner thoughts and visions / live in the moment. You're a gem. And I've always respected you. I love you. XO Joe. And so Katie responds, so what's the story? Quite a leap for me from hitting me up to ask if he wanted a haircut to now just weeks after moving in, you don't even ask him for a place to live. So, of course, I'm very curious. I don't really know what that's saying, but it seems like Katie's being like, what are you talking about? Like, why are you acting so sweet and like you give a fuck when you moved in with my ex-husband? That's basically how I interpret it. So, basically, Katie says, you know, a few months later, she moved into Schwartz and now she's just like moving real sketchy. So they go over to the bar. Sheena goes over to the bar to talk to Schwartz. And she says, oh, I heard there was a sexy singles pool night at Ariana's house that Sandoval had. And he goes, no, see, this is how telephone gets played. And Sandoval comes over and then he gets all upset, you know, like, oh, you know, it's just being made to sound like I just brought over a few girls and was using him as a wingman. We had an orgy, blah, blah, blah. And Sheena says to Tom, I actually also heard from Brock that you were feeling like Rachel had abandoned you or something. And so she tells him, can there be any part of you that can take any responsibility and be like, you know what? Maybe I did hurt this person, or maybe I didn't mean to, but I did manipulate this person. Like, let's talk about Katie. Get over your ego, get out of your feelings and say, you know what, Katie, I actually did fuck up. And I understand that this business I opened with your ex-husband was probably a bit of a part of the demise of your relationship, and I'm sorry for that. Can you do that? And so, in a confessional, Sheena says, and I completely agree, I feel like Tom Sandoval lives, or used to live, in this moral high ground, and if you weren't up there with him, you were below him. If you would just have a little bit more self-awareness and understand it's not just about the affair, then maybe we can one day make baby steps. He's staring at, like, staring into space. You could see him, like, he's trying not to get amped up. And this is what's so frustrating to me. And what I've been screaming this whole time is, what are we fighting for? Y'all want to be friends with Sandoval, but But why? Because you're sitting here having to hold his dick and like talk to him and walk him through how to be a human being and be contrite and try to get back into the group. And he's staring at the bar like he wants to punch it. He is talking about like, I'm tired of being the scapegoat. And Sheena's like, you're not a scapegoat. It's about having self-awareness and taking accountability. And he's like, I am. But like, people just want to go through the past 10 years of my life. And she's like, I'm not talking about the past 10 years. I'm talking about the last year. So Sheena says, you know what? We're going into circles when I was just trying to help you. So she walks away. It's finally clicking into her. Like, I'm wasting my time with this idiot. Why she's continuing to do it is beyond me, but whatever. Sheena walks away. James tag teams and is like, what are you doing, man? You're just going to burn every fucking bridge around you, bro. Your whole life's crumbling. You're letting it happen. So Sandoval's like, I'm not groveling to these motherfuckers anymore, dude. We've all done fucked up shit. I'm over this shit. I'm out. And then he takes his little white pants and leaves. Little wide legs. So the next day, we're back in Marina Del Rey with Sheena and Brock. They're fighting again about the nanny and how it sounds like they don't have consistent schedules, and Brock wants to have one because he wants to be a businessman. I don't know what he wants to do, but he seems upset about his inability to do it. At one point he tells Sheena like this is messing up his whole schedule, and she tells him, lower your tone, Sandoval. I think this is inappropriate, but I am looking forward to the next couple of years where the women of Bravo just refer to their partners as Sandoval. So after that, Sheena tells Brock that she had a great conversation with Ariana and a bad conversation with Sandoval, and just being like, why am I even trying? She says after she had that bad conversation with Sandoval, she goes over to Katie and Ariana frustrated and is like, why am I even trying with her? So every time like they both told you stop bothering, and they're the first ones you want to run to after they told you what would happened. You see how that's goofy, Sheena? You see how that might get old very quickly with people?
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Because they're telling you, and it's like, never mind. So then, you know, Brox is the only thing that makes sense, although it wasn't really relevant to what Sheena was saying, you know, about being upset about finding out about Dancing with the Stars on Instagram. Brox says, you know, I just worry or wonder, like, when things sort of slow down with Ariana and she has time to take a breath, how that is all going to shake out emotionally because, you know, she's just been going, going, going. So then we go back to Ariana's house for game night, right? She's hosting it with Katie. Tom's upstairs on the treadmill saying that, you know, after reflecting on the night before, he doesn't feel like he's at all responsible for Tom and Katie's breakup, but he wants to let's listen to this. I want to prioritize the things that are important to Sheena because I want that friendship. False. Cappington. You want that friendship for the cameras. You want this friendship for the show. Like, I'm going to prioritize doing this. I'm going to do the things that she says for me to do, even though I don't care. nor do I feel like I'm responsible for this. I mean, is he responsible? Not totally. Not totally. I mean, I think ultimately Schwartz is responsible for letting Sandoval be disrespectful towards his marriage. So Ariana gets a text from Anne saying Tom's going to come down to make himself a little protein shake. So she's like, Katie, I'm going to start on my makeup upstairs. You mind if I leave you down here? Bye. So Katie's downstairs, like, getting the party together. And she says in a confessional, it's amazing how Ariana leaves the room and now all of a sudden the house gets cold and dark and I can't really breathe. So he's making his shake, right? And he's like, you know, Katie, obviously I've been doing some thinking and reflecting on all this shit. And, you know, Katie, I really want to apologize to you for the way I acted last year during your divorce. I know that you were going through a lot and I probably didn't need to do, like, add any of that extra shit. So she's, like, scrolling on her phone, rolling her eyes. And she tells him, if you're apologizing, that's great. But for me, apologies are just words. And at the end of the day, you fucked up big time. And so Tom says very sarcastically, like, oh, yeah, I fucked up big time. So Katie says, it is fathomless to me to carry on an affair like that. And Tom goes, it's fathomless? Like, you can't even fathom that happening? And she goes, no. No, what I did was walk away from a 12-year marriage when I still love that person because I wanted to be happy. I didn't start fucking his friend. And so Tom goes, we're not the same people. And she goes, obviously. So Katie says in a confessional, I was in love with somebody who was never going to love me like I wanted and deserved to be loved. So I know exactly what it feels like, probably even deeper than him. Probably deeper than this man will ever feel anything a day in his life. So then Tom says, you know, I'm just trying to look back and learn and, like, reflect on the situation. And Katie says, okay, well, you need to actually just start moving differently. And so they get back and forth about, like, the party that he had. And she's like, it's really a bad look and a lot of audacity to be having random people over at the house at this point. And he's like, Katie, do you understand that, like, if I wear a blue shirt, then people are like, oh, how can he wear blue? Like, how dare he? Give me a little bit of grace. No. No. So then Tom says he tried really hard to apologize at the reunion and it's still not good enough for Katie Maloney. Yeah, because your shit was whack. I apologized 3 months ago, Katie. I tried to cry. Okay. And since then, it's like I said a while ago, like it's giving Taylor Ann from Southern Charm. Like, she had a limited amount, a finite amount of apology and sincerity and sorry that she was going to give. And if you didn't accept that, then that's it. And then that's your fault. And now I'm the victim. So I'll hit you with the Uno reverse. Wild. So Katie tells him to have a little bit more decency and respect. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have a conversation with Ariana about that. Like, we need to have a conversation at some point. She's like, well, she wants to sell the house. So Schwartz comes over and now Sandoval's like all hopped up and emotional, saying that the pain comes in waves and, you know, he's journaling and not drinking and that he was doing those things as a way to connect to Rachel because he knew that she was journaling and being sober too. So he shows Schwartz like rifling through pages of his journal. And then he pulls out this Ziploc sandwich bag that he said, look, man, like I smuggled this into, you know, JoJo Siwa carrying him on his back. And there are two pictures of him and Rachel, but her face is blurred out. So Tom Schwartz is like, do you still talk to her? And Sandoval goes, no. And Tom makes his face like, ooh. I cannot imagine being around somebody that you claim to be any sort of friend to you, much less a best friend for years and be so uncomfortable and embarrassed by their actions, like constantly. So then Source is like, hey man, seems like you're feeling a little down today, a little sullen. We keep seeing close-ups of these two pictures, like, girl, you know, like Rachel and Tom in happier times. So now he's all revved up. The most awkward situation where Sandoval goes into the closet, not too far, just inside the door so that they don't have to, the cameras can get him, right? Now, did y'all see a tear? Because I didn't. I just heard, nary a tear. Not a fucking one. You know, I thought when she got out, like, we'd be able to connect and, you know, now I'm thinking that's never going to happen. And Schwartz is just sitting there in a chair in his bedroom, like, just waiting for him to stop crying. So then Sandoval, you know, is done with his performance and he goes, sorry, dude, I just, like, I look at these pictures and I don't think it's ever going to happen again. So Schwartz goes, well, if it's any consolation, I really feel in my soul that you're at the tail end of this. And Sandoval goes, dude, no, it's not even remotely accurate. I'm being treated like fucking Scott Peterson. It don't fucking linger with me like I'm Scott Peterson. And Schwartz goes, you're not Scott Peterson. Didn't he murder his wife? And Tom goes, allegedly. And you know what? It isn't even remotely accurate because in like 3 months ago, I'm going to compare myself to another guy who killed his wife. And then I'm going to make a comparison that you're really not going to believe, bro. So no, it's not over. So then Thomas Schwartz says some famous last words in a confessional, which is that for the first time, he does not know how to help Sandoval, but he's been racking his brain, trying to find anybody who might have more expertise in this area. Someone who's been like able to go through it and show Tom that there will be better days ahead. So he tells Sandoval, I'm going to try to break you out of the Raquel spell and heal. And Sandoval's just like putting concealer on in the bathroom. And he's like, oh yeah, I'll try it. So everybody comes to game night, right? And Lala goes, wait, is he here? Is Sandoval here? I knew the energy was off. So they play Never Have I Ever. One of the questions is, never have I ever had a threesome with two dudes. I made a note. Nobody else did. Katie took a sip. Let's hear more on that. I want to hear more of that story. Nobody even noticed it because they were so focused on Brock. It's like, you guys are shocked that an Australian man who looks like that has been in a threesome with other dudes. Like, really? I'd be shocked if he hadn't. Probably illegal to not do that. Like, why were they surprised? So anyway, he says that he was not involved. He was just in the room where things were going on. Sheena is like, well, mine was more of an orgy situation. And so they ask her in a confessional who she did it with. And she goes, oh, it was with an A-list celebrity. Once upon a time, my body was a wonderland. I'll say that. Okay, girl. Okay. Tell it to Andy, girl. Do you think that Andy and Sheena, I really wonder this, have Andy and Sheena had a real in-depth conversation about the fact that that she has fucked his friend? Do you think they have? Like, Leah, if you want us to be intrigued by the story, let us know that. Tell us the tea about John Mayer. How about that? So the next day, Schwartz is getting in bed. He's getting a text from Jason Couchy Taylor, saying, I got your message. I got to check with Brittany, but it should be okay. And Schwartz goes, yes, I'll see you there. So then we head to Tom Tom. And I hope you guys saw in the very beginning, they're just doing a very, like, just B-roll, blink and you miss it, sweeping shot of the Tom Tom bar. And the bartender behind the bar is, like, trying to be cool and play with the bottle. You know, they're always flipping it around and, you know, baton twirling it. But he just drops it. The bottle just falls on the floor. And he and he just looks at himself like, damn. Because he knew that camera was on him. And he was like, damn, I was trying so hard to look cool. And that bottle just shattered on the ground. You could tell. Anyway, Brock and James show up to have drinks with the Toms. But we cut to a quick scene of Joe getting her chart read by Allie. Allie tells her, Joe, you're a Sagittarius rising, which makes all the sense in the world because James is too. And y'all have all this boundless energy. But then she tells her that she's got like something in her eighth house, which like her witch house, right? and how Joe is like a light for people along the way. And Joe is taking this in like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Allie. Wow. Like this was a, like so powerful for her. And she's just drinking in the moment, right? So back to boys' night, right? Bragg is talking to Schwartz, like, what is your relationship with Joe? And he's like, oh, you know, last summer we had this whirlwind romance. It was amazing. And Jay's like, all right, she's a secret though, right? Both of the Toms are like, no, no, she's not. Schwartz says that he does not want to date anybody right now. And Brock goes, but does she know that? Good question. And then back to Allie and Joe, who Allie's telling her, you know, it's funny because Schwartz is a Libra and he activates your house of friendship and community. And it feels like it's definitely a friendship bond. And Joe looks at her like confused at first. And then she makes a face like, yikes, that's not what I wanted to hear. But then Allie goes, well, you know, but friends do turn into lovers too. I've seen that happen a lot. And Joe's face is like, oh, cool. Great. Great. We're back on track. So then Allie tells her, listen, you know, I'm friends with Katie and the other girls, but I want you to feel welcome. And Joe's like, you know, well, it's really hard when you're an anorexic crackhead whore. And then my mom's texting me like, did you really do crack? What Katie said in that Instagram, I think this was a comment for some post. She says, Joe is spooky. I mean, none of us could seem to be around her. Her energy is on par with a crackhead. She's a psycho. And I will also light her on fire with Rachel. Back to Schwartz. She didn't call her a crackhead. She said her energy is on par with a crackhead. So, and she didn't call her anorexic either. What she did call her was a psycho. But you missed that, Joe. you leapt over the descriptions and passed over the actual accusation, which is that she called you a psycho. You would be upset about that, but you missed it, it seems. Anyway, back to Schwartz. He says that a lot of the girls, but mainly Katie, have an issue with Joe. And Sandoval's like, yeah, she's like really sweet, such a sweet soul. And she's like so weird that, you know, the two girls that Katie doesn't like, Rachel and Joe, also happen to hook up with Schwartz. Like, that's so weird. I'm like, you think you're eating and you're making a point here, and you're not. You're talking about the two girls who shoved it in Katie's face to hook up with him. There's a difference. Remember how many times last season was it drilled into our heads? The only rule is don't hook up within the friend group. And he did it twice. Right in front of her face. Move the bitch in. And then made out with your bitch. Unbeknownst to his ex bitch. He did it for you. That's weird. That's weird. But yeah, okay, Katie's the one being a hater about it. Okay. So Schwartz tells the boys, I would not be embarrassed to date Joe. I just want to be single for a long time, which I think is nobody asked you if you'd be embarrassed to date Joe. So why would you bring that up? Why? Interesting. So he's like, you know, I just want to be single for a long time. I'm not trying to relive my glory days, but, you know, the nights when we used to go out back in the day, like they're fewer and farther between. They should be. You're 47 years old. How many times do you need to get lost at a resort in Mexico, Schwartz? So then he says, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, because Brock was like, oh, you know, I wasn't that mate, but it was crazy. And, you know, like, it was like, yeah, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. And then we see black skinny jeans, black t-shirt, and some stark white Nikes. And Jason Couchy Taylor walks in and says, well, well, well. Sandoval looks like he gets a headache immediately. Like, it was giving, you know, when Jill walked in, hi, and Alex got hives. And Alex McCord got hives. That's what happened to Sandoval. And I was so delighted. I practically leapt from my seat and clapped. A rousing round of applause. Because here's the thing, it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so I'm living for this. I'm living for this. And this has been years in the making. Like, we did it, y'all. This is a full circle moment. I will tell you, not for 1 second since Jax Taylor got off of our screens have I wanted him back, but this was the perfect time for it to happen because we have to like really set the scene. Jax left the show like so unceremoniously and not at all on his terms with Lisa Vanderpump practically pulling his pants down and spanking him, which oddly enough, we're going to have to talk about later. And telling him, this is not your show. It's my show. I brought you into this world. I'll take you out. And then she did. And also, we have to remember that this was Sandoval's, like, greatest season where Jax was really being such a hater about TomTom. And it was, like, kind of irrefutable that even if you didn't like Sandoval, Jax was just being a little dick. And he was not growing up. And now Tom had this bar and he's got this great girlfriend and things are really going stable. And Jax was like, oh, I would never get a bar. That's too much of a risk. I would never do that. Like, he was being such a hater. And then he just like totally got coked out one too many times. And Sandoval had to be like, you know what? This relationship, I have evolved and moved on. And I can't take you with me. You're toxic. You're a cokehead. And you're a loser. And it looked really good on Sandoval at the time. Like, we're not going to rewrite history and say that was not a smart decision. But now for Jax Taylor to come back stronger than ever. And finally, because Jax has been like, there's something wrong with Sandoval, you guys. Y'all don't get it. And now he's coming back and he's like, here I am. Like a fucking WWE wrestler going to claim his belt, you know? Like, shocking, like Triple H just walked in and everybody's like, oh, this is what dreams are made of. Hey now, hey now. So Jax sits down and he is 100% the Jax that we saw last. He's dumping about how great he is and projecting, oh, you know, I can be, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm most opening up some fucking ghost kitchen in Studio City named Jax's. And so Brox is like, oh, well, mate, if you ever need any advice on opening up a bar, I know a couple people that open one up. And Jax is like, oh, and no offense, no offense, but you guys are like the last people I'd ask for any restaurant advice. So Sandoval says in a confessional, I just feel like Jax has always had some sort of competition with me. And that's unfortunate because we were such good friends. No, you weren't. And that's why it was great. But as time goes on, like, I realize what brings Jax more joy than anything is celebrating other people's failures and misery. Yeah. And it was all good until it happened to you. And that's why I'm giggling. So Jax says to Sandoval, so how are you, man? Because you look a lot better. Like, you know, I'm not going to lie. I saw a picture of you on Instagram a couple weeks ago. And I thought, oh, my God. This guy looks like he's 50 years old. And it does seem like you look better. Minus the white nail polish. Like, you got to get rid of that. And everybody's like, okay. Jax, time out. You're coming in so hot already. So Jax is like, I can't lie. I mean, like, obviously I've heard what's going on. And Tom's like, yeah, I know. You can't shut up about it. Cut to him talking about it on his podcast, right? And Jax is like, well, I can't not talk about it. The whole world talked about it, you know? I also love when Jax gets in his little loops of phrases. Like, when he would get called out for something on the show, he'd be like, you're not perfect either, sweetie. He would just say that to anybody. Stassi, Kristen, Brittany, Sheena, Ariana. You're not perfect either, sweetie. The whole world's talking about it. It's not just me, the whole world. Okay? So, why is this delighting me? I'm sick. I'm a sick bitch. This really brought me so much joy. I gotta unpack that with somebody. So then Jax tells him, as though anybody asks, he goes, you know, the only problem I had with this whole situation is the way you handled it. Like, you got to tuck your tail between your legs and be like, you know what? I fucked up. It's a humbling experience. So Tom's like, yeah, it must be humbling to only have one interesting thing to say when you're talking about me. And so Jax is like, don't you think you should humble yourself? And Sandoval says, I'm not humbling myself to you, dude. You don't deserve it, homie. And so Jax goes, I'm just curious. I can ask questions. So Sandoval tells him, you've been relentlessly talking shit about me. And Jax goes, the whole world has been talking about you shit about you. The whole entire world. So Schwartz is whispering in confessional. Oh my God, this is so bad. This is so bad. So Sandoval says to Jax, guess what? You know, when the whole entire world was talking shit about you and you were going through it, did I fucking dogpile on you? No, I didn't. No, I fucking didn't. Jack says, yes, you did. You called me out on a bunch of shit and I read it all. You're me 7 years ago. Worse. At least when I did it, I owned my shit. And my life is the best it's ever been. I've grown up. I worked my ass off to get where I am right now. I have a great wife, a great home. I got everything in the world that I could possibly ask for. You are literally a disgrace. So then Brock is like, all right, mates, let's take a beat. Because to be honest, y'all haven't seen each other for a hot minute, right? So Jax is like, okay, man, I know I came in guns blazing. And yes, I got triggered. God, please. I would take triggered away. I would take it all away. If Jax could not have any sort of ownership of that word, because he's just going to weaponize it. Right now, I was triggered. But this stuff, you know, like I needed to get it off my chest and I'm not going to interrogate you anymore. You're a huge part of my life. And if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't be here. And I wouldn't care. I have your name tattooed on my arm. Remember you got that Tom and I tattoo? So then they're like, you know, I've done the same thing. All of us here have done the same thing. Jack says in a confessional, I hit rock bottom. I had the best job in the world on Vanderpump Rules. I let my ego get ahead of myself a little bit and I fucked it up. So like I said, the last scene where he's telling Lisa, this is why my show is successful. And Lisa's like, oh, this is not your show. It's actually my show. Put your ass on it. Don't be fucking disrespectful to me. So Jack says, you know, I was in such a dark place because I felt like I lost it all financially. We're like, shit, what are we going to do now? My wife is pregnant. It was rough. I get emotional just thinking about it, but I can't be like, poor me. I had to figure something out and start from ground zero. And then I waited and waited and waited for years, posting camera emojis in the hopes that some show would pick us up. And then you fucked up, Sandoval. And all my dreams came true. So they hug and Jack says, you know, I didn't mean to like do all this, but you know, and after 2 years of all this, then he says he's got to get home. And Jack says in a confessional, I was a runaway train for a long time and I didn't care about anyone or anything and I was just very selfish. And then he walks off the Vanderpump confessional chair, out of the chair, and then onto the Valley set and into that orange couch and the new green screen. And he says, but you know what? I'm not as wild and crazy as I used to be. I've got a good family. And I just don't like to do the things that I used to be. Like, I barely like staying up past 10 o'clock. The switch just went off. And so then cut to Jax in the back of the car saying to the cameras, I don't want to go home. I want to go out with Schwartz and stay out with Schwartz until 2 o'clock and do shots. Get fucked up. Welcome to the Valley. Oh, my God. And welcome to another new segment over here at Everyone's Business But Mine. I loathe to admit, we're going to take a dip in the Valley.
Whoa.
I'm not sure.
I wanted a baby.
No. You were at my house
you
here
want a baby no matter
telling
what.
Alex to come inside you. I was standing right here. And then a week later, you guys broke up and then you did that. You said it right here.
No, so just because I don't tell you all the ins and outs of my personal relationship with my boyfriend doesn't mean that we don't have these conversations.
You gotta stop looking at me because we all had the same conversation.
But Jess, I've been friends with you for 16 years.
But you have the history longer with her.
16 years?
You've been with her for 16 years.
I know Luke just as long as you guys know Luke.
Mommy loves you. I'm going to get in with you in a second, okay, baby?
Let's talk about it, right? A Dip in the Valley is going to be a new segment in which I choose, okay, whether or not I want to talk about the Valley. And if I do, we're dipping in and dipping right back out, okay? I refuse to commit. I'm going to be very fair weather and fickle about this show. I'm telling you right now, okay? And if it's bad, we're hopping off. I'm going to pretend like it doesn't exist. If it's good, we'll talk about it. But we're going to do it still in little dippies, little dips and dabs, because I just don't want to do a deep, in-depth recap of this show. I don't think it would be fun that way. And also, I don't want to. Okay, so we're dipping in. This is going to be a big dip because it's the premiere. We don't know people. There's things to talk about, but, you know, forewarned. Okay, let's dip. Starting with number one. Kristen referring to West Hollywood as a concrete jungle made me want to turn the shit off immediately. Okay? Immediately. Moving on. Two, there's a guy named Jesse. He met Jax in what I assume is like the 1980s in New York when they were modeling. I don't know. He's married to this lady named Michelle. They don't live in the Valley, which they make sure to preface. Because Jesse says that it's basically a flex to live as close as they do to the Chateau Marmont. Yikes. They also ask Michelle at one point in a confessional to describe Jesse. And she's like, I don't know. So he looks at her and he goes, loving? Sexy? And she goes, oh, come on. Later in a scene with Brittany and Nia, Michelle tells them, they're all talking about babies because Nia just had two babies. Ooh, her husband. Tough stuff. They're walking, they're holding the babies. Brittany's got baby fever. And they're talking about like how Danny is like such a present father. He's there. He's babies, diapers, not breastfeeding. But you know, he's just like a very involved father, right? Michelle tells Brittany and Nia that for the first year of their first kid's birth, first year on Earth, she slept in a separate bedroom. Jesse never once woke up for the baby. Brittany goes, no offense, but I kind of see that. So anyway, Jesse and Michelle just announced earlier this week that they were separated. So that's two down. So we have Danny and Nia. This seem to be maybe the most solid couple of all of them. Kristen describes them as couple goals, which I would say if I were Danny and Nia, uh-oh. But anyway, Danny has a dark side. Apparently, they call him Dark Side Danny. Danny's an actor. He used to be on iCarly. Couldn't tell you. Nia's a former beauty queen. She says that Danny's exactly what she wanted in a man, what she wrote down, and what she wanted in a partner. And those things were six-pack abs, strong jawline, and pretty eyes. So congratulations, babe. Then we meet Janet and Jason. Janet is heavily pregnant. She has described herself as the aggressive or passive aggressive to Jason, her husband's just passiveness. Janet used to live in the same apartment complex as Zach, who was friends with Brittany from when she was living in Kentucky, and Jasmine, who used to work at Sir, and we know that because in a flashback they show her in a picture with Peter, but Peter's face is completely blurred out, which I would laugh now, but then it leads me to the second thought, which is that Peter announced that he was asked to be on this season of Vanderpump Rules, but they would not be paying him, and so that's why we haven't seen Peter. That's sad, baby. Like, that's actually really sad. Like, he has been on the show longer, technically, than Ariana. Even Schwartz, really. And why? Yeah, and here's what really would chat my ass if I were Peter. I don't even know if he's considered this, but, like, it's not like Rachel left, so it's not like they didn't have the budget, babe. And this show was coming off of, like, probably bigger season than it had ever had. Literal juggernaut, and yet they were like, we don't have anything for you. Not even a Best Buy gift card?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card.
This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Y'all couldn't even get him some merch from the BravoTV.com store? Like, damn, nothing? Damn. Okay, this leads me to my next thought, which is that Jax is deeply hard to consume in high definition. Like, I watched this screener a couple weeks ago on my computer, and I was like, ooh, this is tough. And then on the TV, woo-woo-woo. Brittany's fresh off a surgery table because the guy who gave Jax the 3 or 4 or 7, we're not sure at this point, nose jobs that he had, is now a close personal friend. So he just cuts them up whenever they feel like getting on the table. So she decided she wanted to get rid of her double chin. She got some lipo. So she's got this, like, bandage around her chin and jaw. And yet, significantly less scary than Jax in his natural state or whatever that face is. Kristen Doty is exactly where we thought she would be. She tells us with, I mean, hands stable, not a hint of irony. This is just her life. She tells us she bought a beautiful home and then met this dude, dated him. He convinced her to sell her home, move in with him. 5 months from her moving in, they break up. They break up 7 times over the course of that 5 months, and then he kicks her out of his house. So she gets an apartment. 2 weeks after that, she goes to a wedding. And one thing I know about Kristen Doty is she loves being a bridesmaid more than anybody else on this planet. So she's a bridesmaid, meets her new boyfriend, Luke. He was one of the groomsmen. She thinks, you know what? He's really kind and funny. So what does she do? Goes behind a tent to fuck him at that wedding, and the rest is history. So now they're actively trying to have a baby, and nobody in the friendship circle is really supportive of it at all. Luke lives full-time in Colorado on, like, 70-plus acres chopping wood or whatever the fuck. Jasmine is like, I don't get it. He's just the opposite of all the crazy personalities that Kristen's used to dating, but Luke has decided to live with Kristen for the summer, a.k.a. he's filming the show, but they're also actively trying to have a baby. So Zach is telling Kristen, I told you from the very beginning of this relationship with Luke, for the love of God, please do not date him. You just got out of a relationship. Of course, Kristen didn't listen, you know? She's got a rebel heart. Apparently, Zach has something called heterofrustration, which I may have also been afflicted with a time or two. But he says that Kristen really got lucky. Like, he was really suspicious of Luke, but Kristen ultimately got lucky finding somebody who was, quote, willing to work with her. Like, she's some kind of special victims, like Kristen Doty special victims unit. Like, what's wrong with her? People are alluding all this episode that there's something deeply, intrinsically wrong with Kristen that, like, needs to be managed and watched for. Kristen, I don't know if these people are your friends or they're either really your friends or they're not. You know what I mean? And it's hard to tell where we're landing on this one. Janet, at some point in the episode, like, she comes off as super cute and bubbly and, like, she's pregnant and, like, you know, whatever. And at one point she talks in a confessional about how easy it would be for her to run a jail. And she's talking about running the jail in the same way that I imagine Jen Shah is currently. Like, she's got people on the outside getting her ramen. She's, you know, got people braiding her hair. She's got the girls. Y'all know, I learned this watching Love After Lockup, that in some jails, if the girls want to get makeup and, like, they don't sell it at commissary, right? You can get magazines and you can transfer the ink on the magazines from, like, the photos onto, like, you know, like a cotton ball or something like that, and then transfer that onto your, and you can mix it in with, like, Vaseline, and it makes, like, gel makeup. Women really, you know, happy Women's History Month to us all, you know? From all of us on the outside to all of you on the inside. Beating your faces with old magazines of Cosmo. Y'all are some real ones for that. Anyway, Janet's talking about how she would be, like, running that shit like a tight, you know, like the head bitch. And Jason looks over her like, kind of seems like you want to do that. Should I be concerned? And then earlier in the episode, she was talking about how she used to be a little brat and kicked her parents out of the primary bedroom and her mom was scared of her. So, like, I feel like I should be scared of her. I'm keeping my eye on her. I think that Jax is in love with Kristen. Okay, and I'm just going to say it. I just feel like all of these emotions that he has toward her potentially having a child is weird to me. Like, it's so extra. He's mad, which is weird. But he also seems like he hates Luke, and I'm not really understanding why he hates him other than he just happened to be the clear rebound to this Alex guy that Kristen dated like 5 minutes before. But, like, why are you so mad at Luke because of it? The guys go out for a virtual golf date with each other, and the first thing Luke says to Jax is, "Do you still have me blocked on Instagram?" And Jax, like, won't even make eye contact with him. And he's like, I don't know. Did I have you blocked? Did I have you blocked? And Luke's like, yeah, you do. And he's like, oh, well, why don't you just check and I'll do my best to change it. What is the dude for? What is the attitude for? It's very, very weird. And then he goes on and on and on about how concerned he is about Kristen having a child out of wedlock. And all the bills add up. This clothes, the food, the school. She's going to have a kid out of wedlock. And he's saying this to Luke, the man who's vowing to have a kid with her. He said out of wedlock three times. Three times. Why? When, who said this? Was it, no, Sheena. The same thing that Sheena said about Sandoval is the same thing that Jax does with other people. He can find any sort of moral high ground. And to him, his moral high ground is, I had a child with somebody in a relationship. We were married. We did it the right way. Right? And so now he can use terms like out of wedlock. Like, sir, like, you weren't bending some chick over in Vegas and sending her money to terminate, okay? Like, what are we doing here? Like, you had a kid out of wedlock, technically, almost. So, what are we doing here? And he always does this. He's like, he gets so antiquated when he can find something to be, like, what he thinks is better than somebody. It's laughable. Like, it's offensive, but it's laughable because it's Jax. Like, you can't take that shit seriously. I just don't understand, like, why he's so mad at Luke, why he blocked Luke on Instagram. Like, that's weird. You're married. Why do you care? Brittany has a birthday party for Janet. It's, like, carnival themed. Lala shows up dressed up like Mrs. Roper for whatever reason. Kristen grabs, I think it's Jesse's nipple. And then they're waiting to get tattoos because Brittany hired a tattoo artist. I'm not sure why. But Kristen's having a conversation with Jesse. She grabs his nipple. He looks at her and he kind of like does the motion back at her. And she's immediately like, how dare he? She says in a confessional, are you kidding me? I am so close with Jesse's wife, Michelle, but I'm nowhere near close enough for Jesse Lolly to be anywhere near my boobs. Okay. But he only did it because you did it first. so wouldn't it also be equally inappropriate if you're saying I don't have any sort of relationship with him for you to be touching his nipple? Right? So I just, I'm not saying you can't be offended. It just seems like you, you know, I hate to use the term you started it, but like literally that's what happened. Like we saw it. So I don't know. If you don't want to be touched, then don't touch people like that. Right? Is that problematic to say? I don't think so. I hope not. Anyway, I just, Lala really looked like Mrs. Roper. Anyway, so then, not that I was ever on Jesse's side, but he completely loses me because he calls Lala his mistress at one point, but then he's like, oh, you know, I want to be more cultured. Actually, you're my side chick, which is like, I'm not loving the implications of that, Mr. Lolly. And then he asks his wife, Michelle asks him, can you check on our baby? Because it's like a kids and parents thing. And he goes, no. And he was like dead ass. No. Jax goes on to grill Kristen about whether or not she's mentally there. He actually said that. Or ready to have a kid. You see what I'm saying? Like people are making some real suggestions about what's going on with Kristen in like a deeply serious way. In a way I shouldn't be laughing about, but I am. Are you mentally there? Are you really ready to have a kid? And then to prove his point, because Kristen is being like, I don't really understand why I'm having to prove my readiness to you. And it's starting, like, people are starting to pile up in the conversation and tell Jax, nobody, like, all of us have kids, pretty much. None of us were ready to have kids. You certainly weren't. There's really no time for even normal people outside of this house, because none of us are, to be having kids. Like, nobody's really, truly ready for that. Certainly not you. And that really needs to be stated. So then, to prove his point, he tells everybody that a week before she broke up with Alex, or Alex kicked her out of the house, doesn't matter, that he observed Kristen screaming at Alex. And it's like, he does exaggerate, but I also feel like this happens, that Kristen was screaming at his house to Alex to come inside of her. And then, after he goes on this complete, I'm worried for you and your fitness, because I'm so much more mature than you as a 2-year-old child, he goes over to Danny and pantses him, because Brock tells him to. Pull his pants down, mate. Pull his pants down. And he does. Danny, poor sweet Danny, was not wearing any underwear. And it was just very sad because he was wearing a long t-shirt in a way that, like, looks fine if you have pants on. But when you're a grown-ass man and you're wearing a long t-shirt and then your pants are just pulled up around your ankles, you know, it's tough. It's a tough thing to observe. And it's not his fault. He didn't ask to do that. Jax did that. And yet I still have the ick. So his wife sees this and she gets so upset that she cries. And again, like, she's very early postpartum. Those babies look very new. Danny keeps yelling, three under two, like we have three kids under two, in a way that's like, really, if he had not just gotten pants, I would really have a hard time with. He's got one more episode to stop saying that, though, because it was, my patience was running thin. So his wife gets so upset that she cries. And again, it's like, I understand why she's crying, but it's just like funny to watch a grown woman cry because a grown man pantsed another grown man. You know, it's just like a ridiculous thing to see. So it's hard not to laugh. And I think that's why Sheena was laughing. Like, I would have been like, Sheena and I would have been looking at each other from across the room like, what's going on? Poor Brittany's like, no, Jax didn't mean like that, Nia. I'm so sorry. Like, nobody saw it. I didn't see it. Girls, did you see his penis? I didn't. So Jax has to go and tell Danny, I'm sorry that your pee-pee was out. He that's word for word what he said. Ooh, okay, I'm dipping out. You guys. Okay, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for speaking. Love you. Bye.